Hey friends, welcome to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. This is episode number 105, and today we are remembering Kobe. I'm your host, John Zombro, and I'm here with my co-host, PK, and I'm going to turn it over to him at this time.
Thank you. Thanks, John. John had another topic in mind for this week, and we'll certainly get back to that. But when we were, John and I were texting on Sunday night, really, we thought that when we heard the news, we were texting back and forth the news of Kobe's death, along with his daughter and several other passengers on that helicopter crash on Sunday morning. I asked him if we could just do an episode remembering him. And I think that even at the time, it was just kind of as a way to process the tragedy of it. I wouldn't say necessarily I am a huge Kobe fan or diehard. And certainly neither John or I are journalists or sports reporters, NBA insiders, or knew him personally. So we're just going to talk about what we're feeling, I guess. And then also just kind of reflect back on an amazing athlete. We're not going for clicks. So we do know this is outside of our normal wheelhouse of what we typically cover here at the TLA, but we just wanted to give him some time as a way of processing the tragedy, I suppose. Absolutely. Probably won't be a long one today. Yeah, John, I mean, isn't that what you're kind of feeling?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a chance to, you know, certainly express our condolences to Kobe's family and friends and all the other, you know, pastors and victims in that tragedy. And also, you know, just to use this as, you know, a chance to have a perspective and share.
Yeah, and I think it was just so, I mean, for me, when I had been out, it was a Sunday, I'd been out and I had just, you know, I'd been out for a walk and I ended up seeing something. It wasn't until about 6 o'clock at night, which I actually looked, either caught a link or looked at ESPN. And I just saw that, you know, Kobe died in a helicopter crash. And I just kept saying no to my computer screen. And so since then, I've been listening to some great conversations and podcasts and just, I guess, kind of tuning into, you know, what folks who knew him or had a chance to get to know him as an athlete or a person more. I've heard some good conversations. Probably the best one that I've heard so far was on the Ryan Russillo podcast with Mike Tirico talking about Kobe's last game. Mike Tirico was did the play-by-play for that game. So if you're looking into more like insightful sports reporter insider conversations, it's all out there. But kind of for me, I was living in LA in 2003, and that's the year, if you remember, if you follow basketball at all, where in 2000, 2001, and 2002, the Shaq Kobe Lakers were just on a run. They were dominating, they had three-peated, and they were just kind of legends, like a force in the NBA. John, were you following basketball at that time?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they were just, I mean, Shaq was clear. Shaq, you know, that's right around when he won all his MVPs. And, you know, we have the iconic alley-oop from Kobe to Shaq and the hug after the fact. And so, you know, I wouldn't say I was a Lakers fan per se, but I was living in Los Angeles and it was just kind of thought of that they were just going to go on this, you know, Jordan-esque run forever. And so I remember that Spurs series in the Western Conference Finals. I was in this kind of bougie nouveau bar that wasn't even a sports bar in Santa Monica, and the Spurs were up 3-2, so it was game six, and the Spurs just beat them. And I remember it was just kind of a shock, and but kind of in a way that was assumed that, you know, everyone just assumed this was gonna go on for a long time. Then they, you know, they lost to the Spurs, who were kind of like the consistent dry white toast, you know, vanquisher of this really entertaining team in the Lakers at the time. And then they did. They broke up. Shaq peeled out. So that's not a great story. That's just a context of maybe, you know, why I felt like we wanted to talk about this today. But yeah, John, did you watch that series?
Yes, I did. that at that time, my son was 12 years old and, you know, playing all kinds of sports, and I got to, you know, live my childhood again. So we would, you know, it's playoff times, June, you know, so we'd go someplace, a park or, you know, a school playground, shoot some hoops, you know, maybe play, you know, some horse or some one-on-one. And then we'd wind up usually going out for pizza or something like that, you know, and watching those games if we didn't go home to do that. And, you know, a great time in sports history. You know, I've certainly been, you know, fans of, in some ways, a lot of those teams and the players. But specifically, you know, I think that was, you know, it was Kobe's time among other folks. You know, he just really, you know, rose up and established himself as a force of dominance in the NBA. And then, of course, later, you know, just as a person and a contributor to society and art and many things.
Yeah, art and many things. And I think that even now, so we look at that through the 2020 lens, there was a lot of, you know, player movement and turmoil and personalities. And certainly there was some dynamics going on with that Lakers team. But, you know, I think that, so what I kind of wanted to do, John, is if we kind of take that as a jumping off point and kind of put it in the context of the TLA world, I have kind of three questions that I want to talk to you about. Okay. Or more ask you about, just because, you know, we are, again, not NBA insiders or knew him, but if we kind of look back and reflect on an amazing 20-year career, and depending on where you put Kobe's skills, he's generally thought of as a top 10 player of all time. And certainly we're going to look at him, you know, just mostly on the court today. But the first question that I have for you is, what kind of animal fit, what would Kobe be in the context of animal fit? And I just want to hear your answer and then dive into that a little bit more.
Sure. So just for the audience, and just in case, you know, we need to clarify, animal fit is,
yes,
it's the ebook program that we have, which helps you to determine your body type and really appreciate it and leverage it. And so the tagline there is to unleash your inner beast and unlock your athletic potential. So that's it's kind of a scientific system that I developed that's based on, you know, anthropometric measurements or somatotype body type theory. And it, you know, looks at bone diameter and skeletal mobility in terms of connective tissue, muscle fiber types, different kinds of things. So you can actually do this and really come up with an animal, one of nine animals that you probably are in terms of, you know, as an exerciser or an athlete. So sorry for being a bit long-winded there, but, you know, in doing a tribute or a salute to Kobe, I would say that he really epitomized the Bobcat. You know, and so the Bobcat, just to give a little bit of additional mm-hmm. information, you know, it has a mesomorphic base, kind of a panther base, if you will, is what we call it. And then there's some blending of slenderizing traits from what we would call the coyote presence in Kobe. Although I would say that, you know, at 6'6", as an extremely springy, agile, elastic basketball player, you know, he, again, more panther than coyote in his presentation.
Right, right. And what's interesting, I guess, just in the way that we've talked about this, like my father, he's gone through and he is a, you know, he's a 75-year-old white guy, and he's also a Bobcat in the context of animal fit. He just happens to be, you know, 5'6". And so I thought it was interesting when you texted me that earlier, I started thinking about it. Certainly Kobe, dynamic athlete as a, you know, a young player, and he can continue to evolve. But when I went back and started looking at some clips through the lens of him being a Bobcat with a little bit more of a slenderizing, you know, like a skinny panther, essentially, you could see it in his game and in his body. And sort of, I guess, in contrast to maybe some of his peers, he wasn't that straight panther with the, you know, in terms of that, he did look a little, I guess, skinnier, mm-hmm. even though he's very muscular and dynamic. And I thought that was kind of interesting and maybe unusual.
Yeah, one of the things I think that's happened in the NBA is, you know, it's become very physique driven, and you know, you look at most of the positions, you know, there's a fairly high degree of consistency amongst the physiques of the players. But you know, as a position player, you know, a shooting guard with a lot of versatility, you know, really could rule the court. You know, Kobe had that, you know, kind of, you know, ability to move quickly and be a shapeshifter, but you know, the cat-like agility that you see most guards and forwards in basketball are going to have, you know, that Panther base, because just the jumping and the movements, you know, you just can't get that type of performance out of someone who doesn't have those traits, you know, and so obviously they do so well. But that's kind of what I would see. And I would also try to remind, you know, maybe you and I and everyone else, that when we look at these animal fit models, height's the one thing that really doesn't factor in. So a body type can be short or tall. And it can, you know, so your dad, you know, is every bit as much a bobcat as Kobe, and there are foot difference in height. And it's always good to mention that, because really when you're looking at the skeleton, it's more about the diameter of it than the length of the bones.
That's interesting. And so if we kind of go back to, I don't know, two decades in the league, right now, 2020, we have 2019 in particular, in the NBA, there's load management, there's, you know, active rest. But if you look at sort of when Kobe made his bones early in his career and on to the late, he played a ton of minutes. And so do you think that kind of having a little mix of that endurance of the Coyote sort of contributed to him having two full decades of productivity?
Yeah, absolutely. There's kind of a trade-off there. And I think, you know, I saw one of your questions we're going to probably talk about more when we get to weight training. But, you know, you got to have some body armor in that game to take that abuse. But also, you don't want to have a body that's too big, just because the energy required and the wear and tear of moving an exceedingly large body is exponentially greater than that which is one that's more lithe or compact. And so again, I think that that helped Kobe quite a bit. In fact, if you start to really parse this out and you look at a number of players who've had long careers, you know, they tend to be, you know, moderate in body size. They can't be frail, that's not going to work, but you know, generally speaking, again, there's some exceptions, the biggest people may not last as long as the medium-sized people, if you will.
Yes, and that's interesting. So we're gonna talk about how, some of the work that he did with his. That's my second question for you. But beyond that, because you know, animal fit also helps you classify where you fit in terms of not where you fit in, but sort of reconcile maybe some of your personality types or your drive. And you know, he also was a legend for, you know, the Mamba mentality, for being competitive. And he was also really forging his own identity under the scrutiny of being the next or expected to or wanting to be the next Jordan. I think that if we sort of look and we put his entry into the league in the context of Jordan was ascendant. He was also 6'6". He would have been Jordan if we looked at him more straight Panther, muscular, sort of like apex Panther. And as Kobe came along, he was similar enough, but his game was different. And he was also a likable, you know, celebrity, and he had endorsements. But he was different in his own mind. So I don't know, when you think about that, beyond body type, what comes to your mind about, I don't know, his mentality and what you saw? We had such a long time with him. What did you observe?
Yeah, just a couple of observations that are fairly general. You know, one thing, I think we go beyond body type and nuts and bolts, and that, you know, what makes players great is, you know, what's inside of them in so many ways. And so, yeah, a lot of these, you know, athletes that really shine on the court and on game day, you know, they're what we call dopaminergic, or they really find a way to, you know, kind of get up for the things when it counts, you know. And so that's always a, you know, a good game day trait to have. Mm-hmm. And you know, I also think he, you know, balanced that with, you know, what he did kind of off the court to keep that season going. But in the end, what I would say is that, you know, if I looked at Kobe over his career, you know, he certainly had that champions, competitors, victors court sense. You know, like the names are unlimited. You can just in basketball, you mentioned Jordan, and of course we've got, you know, Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, and more recently we've got James and Curry, and those names go on and on. You can go back and forward, but the point would be, these bodies, it's almost like talking about peak performance. I'm not trying to pitch that or anything, but like, you know, what we do with conditioning or fitness is we combine training and recovery. So you do that, and then that gives you this capacity. But then really how you achieve peak performance is you take your mindset and you use that body to the maximum. And he was really good at doing that.
Yeah, that's a great way of phrasing it. He used his mindset and then he applied it, you know, to win, to dominate, to eviscerate his competition. All right. So kind of building off of that, like, initial question, the second thing I wanted to ask you about was weight training, specifically resistance or lifting weights. So I remember reading a story or seeing a video hit back in the mid, maybe early 2000s about Kobe lifting hard before games. And this, you know, I might be not remembering exactly right, because I'm just off the top of my head. I couldn't find the story that I found in reflecting or preparing for today. But what I remember was it was specifically the lifting before the game itself. And I remember how uncommon it was. And then there'd be a story about it. And, you know, the basic thrust of it was, I got to get my lifting in. I'm going to do it even before game, just because in an 82 game season, there is, you know, you have to be strategic about that. So that just kind of always stuck with me, that even on a day where you want to win the game, he was lifting before, and I didn't quite understand it then. And certainly we can talk about some of his legendary off-season stuff, but what are your thoughts on that? Do you remember kind of seeing the same thing? And what was your impression of specifically the resistance training? And then we put that in the context of him being a Bobcat, needing to build up that body armor and sustaining what then was a much more physical game.
Oh man, do I love that. And yeah, so I've got probably an equally long-winded diatribe to get into. And I would say, first of all, you know, sure, there were people before Kobe that were certainly doing some of these things and with some consistency, but I'm really going to say he was an innovator in training and recovery. I mean, a guy that just adopted, really an early adopter of science. And so now everybody does it. You know, you talk, everybody's tracking, you know, their sleep and they're eating well and they're looking at recovery and they're using, their physical preparation, training to greater successes. Well, not everybody was doing it, but he was, you know, a leader in that and certainly mm-hmm. inspired us. You know, we have to be very grateful for that. And I think the way that you were phrasing this, first of all, was I've kind of got two thoughts that came to my mind. One is, okay, if you look at the first couple of years in Kobe's career and then the last couple of years, you know, you can see a change in the body, and it's not just, say, like, you know, maturation as far as, you know, getting older as a person, but you know, his delts are thicker, his trunk's thicker. He basically added some physical armor through weight training to improve durability in the body, durability in those connective tissues. Even, you know, we can talk about the Achilles tendon, you know, stuff as well, but that's really what consistent time in the weight room does for every human. You know, it makes your connective tissues better, stronger, thicker, more resilient. And, you know, he really benefited from that, because as that Bobcat, you know, coming in the league, he could have been, you know, knocked around and beaten up a little bit, but instead he brought himself up to a level where, you know, he not only could take it, could dish it out.
Yeah. And did, I listened to a story about how he was a physical, you know, even a reporter, I think it was I think it was Dave McMiniman. Anyway, he said he asked Kobe a question in the hallway, and Kobe like shoulder checked him, you know, elbow checked him,
yeah,
and sent him across the hall. And so he was a, his mentality was a apex, like the biggest, baddest in the, you know, in whatever arena. And he was physical like that, but you know, his Bobcat frame, he needed to add to it. And I also think, John, it's so interesting about the weight training and the connective tissue. You know, we always consistently connect weight training with muscle, but then the, you know, the cellular structural stuff that is connected with that can escape us, but that had to play a factor in him playing 20 years, even with the injuries at the end.
Yeah. And that's one of the great, there's so many great stories, but you know, one is that, gosh, it wasn't too many years ago when he was really struggling with his Achilles tendon. And at that time, one of the team advisors, team physicians for the Lakers was Dr. Kate Shanahan. And she, you know, kind of is a proponent in, you know, ancestral nutrition. And essentially, she got Kobe on a bone broth protocol. And, you know, there were some people saying, oh, well, you know, you're never going to come back from that injury. And, you know, at doing obviously some doing some things rehabilitatively, but also consuming this collagen rich you know, food that was helping him with his glycosaminoglycans and improving, you know, connective tissue from a feeding perspective. Well, he came back and put 62 up in a game, you know, to kind of squelch the naysayers. And I thought, man, that's really impressive, because that's really what I, you know, I want to have other people notice that, look, if Kobe can barely walk, and then he goes through a process, and then he comes back and scores 62 points, well, then we can use that to, you know, again, you know, get out of pain, get moving better, and use really the professional's example as great inspiration.
I love that you brought that up. I think that I had read that but forgot about it. And at the time, you know, again, this is now, it's 2020, and the idea of bone broth is in our, it's in the cultural conversation. This is, you know, at least 5 years ago, it would fall, bone broth at that time, at least on the woo-woo side of the scale, where, you know, a little bit more you know, touchy-feely, that's not the hard science. But I think that's completely fascinating. And it was, again, innovation and unusual.
Yeah, and the other thing that, I won't beat this point up too much, but just talking about weight training, and sure, and I know you posted as a question, and many other people have discussed this also. Well, why would you do your lift before a game? Wouldn't that right, make you exhausted and compromise things? Well, sure, we may slightly modify the workout, but then one, it keeps you consistent. So you maintain that durability and helps you get through the 82 game regular season. But then there's another thing that's kind of magic that, it, you know, it's been known in certain circles, track and field and football for quite a while, post-activation potentiation. So it's PAP is what, you know, I like to use acronyms, as you know, but when you do the right kind of a workout, you know, so you go through a warm up and then you do some heavy lifts. What you're doing is you're waking up and you're lighting up your central nervous system to activate those alpha motor neurons and recruit more muscle fibers, particularly the fast twitch fibers. And so, you know, he knew that and oftentimes would lift pregame, and you actually have probably more explosiveness, not less, if you do it right.
Wow. And I think that's fascinating, because figuring out the timing on that, he was going to lift. You know that the driven nature of the competitive athlete, but figuring out what the type of lift and then to do it before, you know, you maintain your muscle mass. You hear about over the course of that 82 game season about how wears the body down and the actual mass and strength is depleted from all the players. So not only maintaining that strength, but then also using it, the timing of it to get that PAP, as you say, that's really fascinating. And I never understood that. Like in the story, it wasn't like, hey, this is the right time to do it because of these scientific reasons that you just detailed. It was really, it fell more along the line of, this is when he does it because he's insanely competitive and he's just willing to work harder and just go through more than his peers, which certainly was true. But if you add the intellectual scientific benefits to that competitive mentality, it does make more sense. And I think that it's one of the reasons why it's more pervasive now is just that guys like him did it enough and his peers saw the fruits of that extra labor and said, well, I'm going to get on that train too.
Yeah. And so a lot of that information about post-activation, potentiation, you know, it has relationships to like plyometrics. And so a lot of that came out of the Soviet system. They really were just great contributors for training science. And I remember a story, now I'm blanking because I'm on pressure, you know, on the podcast, but I think it was a great, great Russian sprinter, Valery Borsov. And he was at an event. It was either like a world championships or could have been an Olympic final. I can't entirely remember. I'll have to look it up for the listeners, but so it's a true story though. Borsov was there and you know, most of the runners, they're getting ready to finish their warmups before they have to get behind the blocks and start the race. And so there's a few minutes where, you know, people are doing calisthenics and practicing starts and doing other things. And Borsov had said to one of the officials standing there, "Where's the weight room?" I didn't try to do that in a Russian accent, but he's like, "Where's the weight room?" And the guy's like, "That's inside the door right there." So he dashes in there and does a few sets of heavy squats, comes out and wins a gold medal. So it's like, oh, okay. Right. You know, and there's certainly a wake up to this idea. And I think we've all felt it, you know, when, you know, you really feel amped and ramped and charged. And that's what, again, pre-competition lifting can do as long as you do the right amount.
That's fascinating. That really is. And I think that, all right, my third question, and this is more, you know, this is less on the hard science side of things, as I was reflecting on his career arc and as an impressive individual, Kobe managed to reach the greatest heights of team success, which certainly contributes and is connected to his personal legacy, when he had another exceptional equal running mate, initially with Shaq. Then on the second two championships, Pau Gasol was absolutely incredible. If you watched hoops at those times, he was a beast, and Kobe always talked about him as that. As a beast, as Pau Gasol. So I was thinking it takes two and you can't do it alone, especially in that hyper-competitive team sport. You know, it elevated his already elevated talent levels to have an equal to partner up with. And so it was also a struggle. In fact, that, you know, that certainly the personalities and wanting to be the alpha male was a big contributing factor in breaking up that Shaq Kobe Lakers. And I don't know. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. As I've reflected, is that as exceptional as he was as an athlete and, you know, a human, he was greater when he partnered up with other people in his life.
Yeah, this really inspires me to try to paint a picture. And again, this is a new show format for us. We're, you know, certainly, you know, addressing a topic that we don't generally do. And this is a somber moment again, but, you know, originally we talked about, well, okay, there's this body and what we do with the body. And then we went into talking about, oh, you know, there's the mindset of being a champion or strategically using certain things to really ready oneself or even recover oneself. So we kind of talked about that, but then this next level, maybe it is the apex level, is, you know, peak performance and just life experience, life accomplishment, life contribution is really a part of we being bigger or larger than me, you know, for us humans. And so no matter how solitary, introverted, isolated a person may describe themselves, they're, as humans, they're still social animals, social beasts. And so having, you know, a teammate, a team, friends, family, really, I think that's the key to You know, get the most out of oneself, bring other people up, have them keep you accountable. All those things are important. And it trickles down, you know, whether we're talking about, you know, a great champion taken from us too early, or just, you know, lessons that we all can go through every day with, having some gratitude and communicating and really being a beacon of light for others because they're doing it for us.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well said, John. I'm, you know, again, like you said, this is kind of a new or just contemporaneously shooting off the top of the head. And I think that it just seemed to be so important that, you know, he couldn't get to the top of the mountain alone, even though he was so exceptional all by himself.
Yeah. And that's kind of, I'll wrap up my component here, but, you know, I wanted to very respectfully pay a tribute and also, you know, be cognizant of these lessons and inspirations that Kobe Bryant provided. And again, as many condolences and heartfelt sympathy I can extend to, you know, everyone connected to him and the greater world. That's what I need to do here today. And I just really appreciate the chance for the listeners to allow us to do that.
Yeah, I feel the same. I think that, you know, their unthinkable tragedy. There was 9 individuals and there were some young ladies, so, you know, some young women athletes that were also, you know, on that helicopter and passed away. And so certainly extremely somber moment. And I think that, you know, we'd be remiss not to mention the fact that Kobe also did have some complicated moments in his lifetime, and don't want to gloss over those as well, or, you know, linger too long on those. So I also do want to offer my condolences. I think one thing that, you know, personally, one of the reasons when we were initially texting John on Sunday night that I always thought was very interesting about Kobe was he can't put him into a box. Athlete, basketball player, father, icon. But I liked, as a writer myself, reflecting and seeing him identify as a writer and a storyteller. And not only, you know, we know that he won an Oscar, which is incredible, for that to be a couple years into your second career. But even when he was playing, he was doing some advertising, and also as a copywriter myself, I really appreciate the fact that he wrote some advertising copy, and he did that both with, you know, I guess he had a little bit of a agency that, you know, that was part of his game as well, being a writer, linking together words, wanting to tell stories and being obsessed with that. And so that's just something that I appreciate, the multifaceted artist that was also, you know, in the same being as this hyper competitive winner. And so the complexities just, it, you know, we're fortunate that we've had a lot of time, you know, with him, and his legacy will live on through his good works and his achievements, and certainly through, you know, his family. But yeah, it's, I don't know. And to the listeners, thanks for, if you're still listening, for just riding along and, you know, letting us kind of work through some of our thoughts and, you know, I guess make sense of something that's just unthinkable on the pod today. So condolences, Kobe, rest in peace, rest in power. And, you know, thanks for listening.
Yeah, I have nothing to add. I couldn't say it better than you did, PK. And thanks, guys, for being with us. Have a great day.